Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Before we begin, I want to read several comments that came in over the last several weeks, and that it really is exciting to get good comments, even bad comments. We'll take any comments, but these are really some very positive things. The first one is from a listener in New England, and they write, "Dear JBL, just a few thoughts on H's for Hawk." And they do give a quote from the book, and I think they left a word out, so I'll just go ahead and read what they have. It says, "The crater lake created by bombs and human misuse. It's an area that is back from destruction. It's beautiful, but very different from what it was. There's a very short mention of this, but it struck me as I read the book. The death of her father destroyed a part of Helen. She's trying to repair that part of herself, knowing that she will be whole again, but not be the same person as she was." And I do think that's a really good comment. They also say, "Daryl Hope hit the nail on the head. Helen is the Hawk. She mentions White often his failings when training his Hawk. He tried to train his Hawk against its instincts, its desires. White tries to train his Hawk the way he lived, forcing it to do things opposite its instincts or desires. Helen, on the other hand, wants to train her Hawk to overcome fear, but it's her killer instinct. She lives her life through the Hawk, needing to overcome the death of her father and needing to be strong, a survivor in a real, cruel, violent world." And so, again, that I think those are very, very good perceptions on the book. Now, here's another one. And this is actually from a local listener here in Edmond, Oklahoma. It says, "After reading H's for Hawk, I appreciated learning many things I never knew about, such as training hawks and falcons, and why people did such things for pleasure or other interest and become devoted and skilled in this art. I enjoyed the beautiful writing skills of Helen MacDonald. I think she is a brilliant writer, and I appreciate her humility in bearing her emotions and feelings. I also enjoyed her style of bringing White's book on hawk training into it, with his character faults and errors in hawk training. There are also lessons to be learned from his life and failures. I was dumbfounded at her devotion to training her hawk Mabel, and I wonder if she would have ever pursued this hawking endeavor had not her father died and left her in such a deep state of mourning. If so, we have this memoir to read and learn some of life's lessons. I thought she was on the brink of insanity from loss of sleep and imagining becoming like a hawk. It impressed upon my mind how blessed we are to be human beings, superior and far above any animal life that man can tame and train to a certain degree. The injuries she suffered from the hawk while training were quite depressing to me, but then maybe that helped her to break out of that state of mind. I feel more empathy for those who go through a depression period and see how things can work out for good if one can get their mind on a beneficial project or outgoing endeavor that can help them come out of this depressed frame of mind. I agree with your wife, Deborah. I also skip a lot of the adjectives and get on with the story. Then if I like it enough, I can go back and reread the author's creative writing. So thank you for this wonderful program you provide." And again, that's from a listener here in Edmond. So we really do appreciate that. Well, today we're supposed to begin our discussion of the piano shop on the left bank, but that's just not going to happen. I've delayed our discussion of the piano shop on the left bank by Thad Carhart for 1 week. So we'll begin our discussion on April 3rd. Now, if you have not purchased a copy of this book, you can find a good used one at abebooks.com. Now, I know you're going to enjoy this book. It's much different than Helen MacDonald's memoir. It is another memoir, but it's a look at France. It's certainly a discussion of friendship and it's also a discussion of the author's renewed passion for the piano. So it's not a memoir of misery. In fact, it's kind of a memoir of culture in France. So I know we really enjoyed it. It's going to be a nice break from Helen MacDonald's book. But here's why I delayed the start of Thad Carhart's book. I think there is a compelling theme in Helen MacDonald's book that I feel is worth pointing out to our readers. Now, I've done a lot of thinking about this book, and in some ways it is just a fascinating book to me, even though it was hard getting into, even though there's a few little strange things to it. But the more I think about it, the more I realize that the main underlying pivot of the book is not Mabel the Hawk, nor is it T.H. White, but I really believe it is the question surrounding life and death. Now, what I want to do today in this final program on H's for Hawk, I want to discuss with you that Helen MacDonald was forced to face these mysteries concerning life and death. And although she may have not quite written it this way, the two big questions confronting her are, or were at that time, I have not talked with Helen MacDonald, would like to talk to her sometime. But here's the questions I think she had to face with the death of her father, but also I think she also had to face them training Mabel. And here are the two questions: what's the purpose of life, and then what happens after death? And if you really think about it out there, readers and listeners, all human beings have these same questions. I was just able to attend the memorial service for my father-in-law, and he was a wonderful man and certainly did a lot for my wife, myself, and our children over the years. And it was interesting, as I was sitting in the service, and it was a different kind of service. It was a Quaker service, which is more thought-provoking, is it just seemed people did have these questions about, you know, is there a purpose to life, or what really happens after death? Now, believe it or not, I believe there are absolute truthful answers to these questions. And unfortunately, you're not going to get them from science. You're not going to get them from educators. And you're also not going to get it from the religious elite of this world. And of course, there's a reason for that, and we'll discuss that sometime later. But you can know the answer to these questions. And it's important that you come to know the answer to these questions. And when we know the answers, it really can set us free from misery. I mean, Helen was so devastated by the death of her father. It really is truly tragic. And she was so devastated by it. She was in so much pain over it. We know that she wanted to run from it. She didn't want to face it. And of course, we know the whole story if you've read the memoir. She decided to escape her father's death. And I think even the other mysteries of this world, by getting back into falconry with a goshawk. And again, that was an amazing decision, because goshawks are, well, they're the most terrifying and violent of hawks. And so let's go to page 187, and I want to show you this little paragraph here. And it is really quite revealing. And this is what really prompted me to have this program. And so it's under the chapter Hiding, and she's talking about flying Mabel. And, you know, she really did put an awful lot of effort into training Mabel. And then there comes the point where she has to let her go free. And so, you know, that's really, really quite, I think, would be nerve-wracking if you spent all this time and money in developing this hawk, that you would all of a sudden just cut it free to hunt and then, you know, just kind of hope that it comes back to you. So she says, "We'd come to a different place today, a field on the other side of town, overrun with rabbits. It took less than a minute for Mabel to grab one deep in a drift of nettles. Hawks don't retrieve their prey. You must run to them, let them eat a while, and then take them back onto your fist for a reward of food. I ran, bent down, parted the stinging stems, picked the rabbit up with the hawk, and put them both down on the grass. Now the rabbit is dead, its pelt bunched between the hawk's gripping talons, but blood upwells as she breaks into its chest, and I cannot stop watching it. this horrible, mesmerizing, seeping claret filling up the space, growing jelly-like as it meets the air, like a thing alive. It was a thing alive. I want to sit and think. This is a great mystery. I feel something pressing against my own chest, leaning in, a question wanting an answer, but there's no time for contemplation. Now, I think that's really quite fascinating, the way she says that. And just remember this. She says, here there is this great mystery. She's looking at this hawk who is, you know, really, it's a killer. That's its instinct. It has to kill to eat. And here's this dead bunny, but there's this blood oozing out of the bunny. And yet, you know, she senses life is still in that blood. And she says, this is a great mystery, but, sorry, there's no time for contemplation. And I think if you're really honest with yourself, listeners, and I know I came to this point in my life where I had to be honest with myself, this is one of the major downsides of our fast-paced world. Helen, essentially what she did is she stumbled on a question that demanded an answer. But instead of stopping to search it out, she just moved on. And of course, she was concerned about, you know, losing the hawk, and she wanted to get it, you know, captured again and get it used to her so that she didn't lose all the effort she put into it. So I believe everyone in this world, or mostly everyone in this world, does the same thing. Something stops us, and you know we're facing these questions, and well then something in this world interrupts us, and we just move on instead of getting the answers. In other words, even my father-in-law's funeral, it stopped everybody and forced people to think. Well, like, where is my father-in-law? You know, is this just the total end of his life? And he really was a very accomplished, scientist, and really well known for his field. He was in the field of oil recovery, and actually developed some of the processes that we use today for extracting shale oil from rock. And so he was a well known person. But is that it? And we all talked about how creative he was and how much he loved education. And, I'm afraid that some people there thought, well, that's it. He's gone, and there's nothing else. And I think these are the questions that Helen was dealing with. And, everyone does the same thing. Everyone just, these questions kind of will come into our mind, and then, well, we don't know the answer, or we don't really want to take the time to search it out, and so we just move on. And yet, if you look at this world, it really does need these answers. And, so many people in this world are just bumbling along, really, we're just flooded with materialism, we're flooded with gadgets, we're flooded with great technology that makes our life so easy, and yet we just ignore some of the most important questions. And I think Helen certainly was on to something by even, choosing the hawk to help her. But really, in the long run, you know, the questions were posed to her, but she just kind of moved on. Now, I also think it's very interesting that Helen does perfectly describe our world today. And it's really in pretty bad shape. We have to just admit that to ourselves. Let's just go to into the book and go to page 158. And again, I think this is really kind of a fascinating quote. And in some ways, I'm sorry that she had to go through what she had to go through, but in other ways, I'm glad she was able to write it down, because she is really a great writer. And as our one listener here in Edmond said, you really can enjoy her writing. You don't have to enjoy everything in the book. And I know a lot of people were disturbed by what T.H. White had to go through, that was a reality. Now, you don't have to necessarily write all the details down like we're done. But again, that is, unfortunately, a lot of people have experienced some horrible tragedies in their life. But again, this is when she's really out trying to work on, flying this hawk and getting her ready to fly on her own. And at the bottom of page 158, she says, at a more sensible hour, I stumble into town in search of coffee. The park has been ravaged in the night. Great handfuls of bedding plants have been pulled out of the ground by drunken lads on a rampage. All the sampling limes along the path are wrenched and snapped in half. And so here's this beautiful park, and some drunk teenagers got in there, and they just started destroying it, just destroying these beautiful living things. She says, I look down at a heap of crushed and wilting marigolds and wonder if I might replant them. But the roots look dry, the leaves already curled, so I walk onto the cafe. I sit down at a table by the window with a newspaper and a coffee. There's an article about climate change, an unprecedented summer melt in the Arctic. The Northwest Passage is open. Permafrost is melting. Ecosystems are failing. Horrible news and wildly important, but I can't concentrate on the paper. I keep looking up because outside the window is a line of people. It's not like a line like a ticket queue or an airport line or any like line I've seen before. A woman with perfectly straight bobbed gray hair and close pursed lips grips a binder of loose papers. The man next to her holds one too. They're staring into the middle distance, and no one is saying a word. I don't see the panic beneath the silence for a while, but then the panic is all I can see. So we know that Helen is very perceptive. And, of course, she does compare herself, to a hawk. And I think we all need to get better perception. But here, she's talking about climate change. Now, we don't necessarily agree here at Herbert W. Armstrong College about everything people are saying about climate change, but we do know that people are really disrespectful of the earth, and they're not doing what they need to do to preserve it and to protect it and beautify it. And so we know there are problems, in the environment that are happening out there, and problems that need to be addressed. But there's other major, much bigger problems in the world. And so she sees this panic in these people that are lined up outside a bank. And then she goes on this page and says, this is page 159 now, she says, when she passes my table, I ask Dagmara, the barista, if she knows what is going on. She shrugs her shoulders. I just asked one of them. It's a bank, the Northern Rock. They are taking their money up because it's going bankrupt. I frown at the unmoving lines. Something about it reminds me of Mabel mantling her wings over food. Mine, 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 mine. I've never seen a bank run before. It's something from the Wild West or a gray, blowsy print of Weimar Berlin. When I was an undergraduate, we were told that history had ended, and we all believed it. When the Berlin Wall fell, what history was made of was over. No more Cold War, no more wars, and yet here it was and is, and all of it falling apart. Endings, worlds dissolving, weather systems, banking systems, the careful plans of municipal gardeners, families, hearts, lives, distant wars and small trees wrenched in two. I looked at the line of people and all their fierce possessiveness and all their hidden terror at the thought that their bulwarks against death might be lost. Money, security, knots and lines, the ends of all things, and it is sitting there with this cooling coffee that I think, seriously, for the first time, about what I'm doing, what I'm going to do with the hawk, kill things, make death. And so that, I think that's very descriptive, not only of our world, but it's I think in some ways, Helen was beginning to come out of her depression, even though, she was still in its grips. But that is our world. Our world is really full of horrible news. But the thing is we often don't like to focus on the evils that are beginning to run rampant in our world, and there's reasons for it. And believe it or not, the reason why we have so many evils is people don't know the answer to the question, is there a purpose to human life? And then they also don't know the answer to the question is, is there life after death? Or what happens after death? And it's really not what people think it is. And it's much different than that. And so I think that Helen, with the death of her father, and even, you know, as she's working with the hawk, you know, she's really, really being forced to kind of contemplate these big things, like what is the purpose for life? Here her father, who was an accomplished, you know, photographer, dies. And, here's this hawk, and this hawk has this majesty and this beauty, and she can be really soft, she can be playful, but then when she gets around this sweet little bunny, why, she turns into this violent terror. And so there is some mysteries about this life. Now, it's also interesting, if we go to page 277 in the book, and I just want to bring this out, that she really is very honest about her fears. And I think we really need to bring our fears out and face them. And, you know, remember, this is at the, if you've read the whole book, this is in the title, The Moving Earth, it's about the earthquake. And, you know, I think this is it's a great paragraph. I'll break into the middle of it. It says, when I put the phone down, I cannot calm myself. I put my hands out flat in front of me, palms down. They are still shaking. Stop freaking out, Helen, I tell myself. It's okay. Nothing is broken. Everything is fine, but it is not. The earthquake has brought back all those childhood fears of apocalypse, all the expectation that the world would burn and boil. It's a very old, deep terror, and it feels now that has never gone away. The fabric of the world has torn. I cannot stitch it back together. And again, I'm just going to end the quote there. Now, a lot of us do have fears that we really, if we really understood the answer to those questions, we wouldn't have these fears. And, you know, people do, you know, have these wild imaginations of even of what the book of Revelation is all about. They envision this apocalyptic time, and there's so many books out there, even for teenagers, and we're going to deal with this sometime on the radio, all these books on dystopia. And, you know, it's just something that the Bible is really so misunderstood. There is. Now, the Bible is very honest and truthful. There is a lot of trouble coming to this earth. But actually, the earth is not going to be destroyed. In other words, there is going to be the end of the age of man ruling over man. But the Bible does give all these promises that Christ is going to return as King of Kings. And you don't hear that preached in churches today. But Christ is going to return as King of Kings. He's going to rule this world. He's going to take over the governments of this world, which are flawed because of, well, human beings really don't understand the purpose of human life. And really, the Bible is probably one of the most positive books that you could read. And there is a better world coming, and it's just around the corner. And, you know, we should really be excited about it. Now, she makes this one other quote in here that I want to just read to you that really describes probably what you're thinking and what many people in this world think about, you know, what's happening in society. And it shouldn't be this way. You shouldn't have these feelings. You shouldn't have these thoughts. And this is in the chapter Flying Free, and she writes on the bottom of page 171, she says, there is a time in life when you expect the world to be always full of new things. And then comes a day when you realize that it's not how it will be at all. You see that life will become a thing made of holes, absences, losses, things that were there and are no longer. And you realize, too, that you have to grow around and between the gaps. And though you can put your hand out to where things were and feel that tense, shining dullness of the space where the memories are. And so life does not have to be that way. Life, you know, shouldn't be a disappointment. And even Christ did make one statement. He says, I came, you know, so that people would have life and life more abundant. And so, you know, we don't want to be talking about, you know, syrupy emotional religion, but there is truth. that we need to know. And if you know the purpose for life, the God-ordained purpose for life, and you get about pursuing it, you're going to be happy. You can deal with death. You can deal with the tests and trials of life. What I want to do is I do want to offer you a book that fully explains these two vitally important questions. And the title of the book is The Incredible Human Potential by Herbert W. Armstrong. And this book is free to you. I want to just read you just a quote from this book. And it was an astounding book. I came across this book all the way back, I think around 1972 or 73. And it was just absolutely amazing. And again, I was not necessarily a deeply religious person at that time. In fact, I was hardly deeply religious at all. But this is chapter 3, page 20 of the book. And just to give you a kind of a smattering of what this book is, and it would explain a lot to you. And the title of this chapter is The Incredible Human Potential at Last Revealed. And here's how the chapter opens. It says, does it make sense to you when humanity has been endowed with such tremendous mental power that more than half of all people on earth should be illiterate, living in abject poverty, near starvation, in filth and squalor, that in one country of 26 million people, only 3% can read and write, and per capita income is only $69 per year? Does it make sense to you that human civilization has developed modern science, higher education, the world's religions, and its great governments, yet all these are in total ignorance of the way to world peace? That is a hot question that we need an answer for right now. I mean, this world talks peace, and yet everybody's building for war. It said, none of these can tell us what man is, whether he was put on earth for a purpose, what that purpose is, where he is going, or how to get there. Does it make sense to you, with man endowed with such great powers, that the world should be filled with so much unhappiness, troubles, and evils? So hopefully that would whet your appetite for this book. Now, this book is free to you for the asking. All you have to do is go to the trumpet.com website. If you sign in, you can download a PDF. If you don't want to sign in, you can just ask for a free copy. It will be sent to you, no charge, and there will be no follow-up. So I've really enjoyed bringing this book, H is for Hawk, to you, and I think you would greatly value The Incredible Human Potential if you have the desire to write for it. So just remember that we'll begin our discussion of The Piano Shop on the Left Bank by Thad Carhart at the beginning of April. That's April 3rd. If you haven't purchased a copy of this book, you can find a good used one at abebooks.com. Also, please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JB on Twitter at jbliterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. The address is facebook.com/justthebestliterature. So, until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.